to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Time for our monthly look at consumer issues affecting you with our two guests, Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen, back from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, where Sandy is the Assistant Deputy Secretary, and Michelle directs the Bureau of Consumer Protection within the department. Have you or your loved one been affected by a scam? What did you do to protect yourself against online scams? Have you been affected by a data breach? What'd you do? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Sandy Chalmers, welcome back.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
And Michelle Reinen, thank you for coming by as well. Appreciate it very much.
Sure. Thanks for having us.
This is the time of year when we have lots of things that we can talk about. You shared with us that 37% of fraud complaints were filed by or on behalf of consumers over the age of 60, and 20% of identity theft complaints were filed by people over the age of 60. Is that right?
That is correct. And as you know, Larry, our population is aging. And so there, every year there are more and more of us in that over 60 category. Yeah. We wanted to make your listeners aware of a great publication we have called the Wisconsin Senior Guide. It's a small booklet that goes through a lot of the common scams that target people over 60. You can get that by either calling our toll-free hotline number at 1-800-422-7128, or you can go online and see a copy online at datcpwi.gov. But there are many scams that specifically target seniors. Things like sweepstakes, fake sweepstakes and phony prize schemes, timeshare resales. Oh, things like healthcare products and services, including fake Medicare schemes. The famous tech support scam targets seniors. And some charitable donation scams also target seniors. So it's a population that definitely needs to be aware of what kind of fraud is out there.
Let's talk about the Medicare for a minute, because that's open enrollment started October 15th. Somebody asked me, I have Medicare now. I don't want to change it. Is it okay just to let it go and not do anything? Michelle, maybe you could talk about that for a minute.
You don't have to make a change if you want to maintain the coverage that you currently have. So there is no requirement that you do anything. We really want to make sure that older Americans are watching for that door-to-door visitor or phone calls, from individuals representing themselves as Medicare agents or government agents, and then they claim to offer really big savings through their insurance plan or other discount products, and that's just not the way that it works. So any call that you receive should be incredibly leery of, and just disconnect that call. The government just doesn't sell Medicare Advantage or Gap plans either, because that's another type of scheme or lure to try and get your attention and have you pay attention to that. Only private companies offer those, and then you really want to check it out and know what you're actually getting if you choose to engage in that. What exactly will you be provided from that if you choose to engage in something like that? But there are no sales reps for Medicare. And if you do encounter that, you should report it so they can be on the watch for that. And you can report those at 1-800-MEDICARE. They want to know about that.
They want to know. And if people are asking you for information over the phone, don't give it.
A typical scam is to get a call from somebody claiming to be with Medicare saying, could you just confirm for me the number on your Medicare card, which, of course, now is your Social Security number. Or they may say, you're due a refund for reaching a prescription drug coverage gap, and they'll ask you for your Social Security number, birth date, bank account information. So, we can very conveniently deposit your refund for you. Well, that's valuable information to an identity thief. So anytime somebody calls you and asks you for that kind of personal information, just hang up.
Jennifer on Facebook says she received a postcard version of "We're in from the IRS and you're in trouble." She wants to know if there's an address where she can send this.
Please send it to us so we can take a look at that. I haven't seen the postcard yet, but our address is P.O. Box 8911. You'd address it to our agency at DATCP, and that is in Madison, Wisconsin, 53708, and you can add the dash 8911.
So it's what, P.O. Box, what is it again?
8911.
And 8911.
That's,
okay.
Madison, Wisconsin, 53708.
Okay.
The other option, if she just wants to file a complaint, if she has a scanner or takes a photo of it, she can file a complaint online. And after you hit submit, then you can upload documents, and she'd be able to just attach and upload that. So whichever is easiest.
Let's go to Art in Milwaukee. Art, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah, thanks so much for the show. So I have a related concern. So I'm a lawyer. I've not been effectively victimized by any scams. I have no call registration for all of my phones. Probably get 5 on the average a day of various violations of that. So one level is there really any effective remedy to enforce the no-call list? I've tried to file a complaint online, and it says, thanks for your information. We're too busy to get back to you. One of them, which I have recorded because they left a voicemail, the most outrageous one, it said it's IRS is going to get you and we're going to come and arrest you and call this number, and they actually left a phone number within 24 hours. And it's completely outrageous, distortions, fraud, etc. And I really don't know what remedy there is, if any.
Yeah, I think you may have been phoning the wrong place, Art. Michelle?
Yeah, we don't have any messaging or auto messaging that's of that nature, that piece of it. So you can file a report of a phone call on our website. It's a no-call fast track, and it's just reporting. We wouldn't contact you back unless we needed additional information, and all that's at datcp.wi.gov. Or you can fill out a longer form, and then we will be in communication back and forth with you on your complaint. Or you can call 1-800-422-7128, and they would send you out a complaint form. And if the call lines are busy, you can leave your information, and we'll mail it out, or say you want a call back. But we return everything within 24 hours there. But the part about the IRS, they are becoming incredibly more threatening. We've noticed that in the last few weeks, that the phone calls that consumers are reporting, they've always had a threatening nature about you need to pay now, or there'll be a warrant or jail, or you'll be in trouble with the IRS. But they're becoming more and more aggressive in the recent weeks from consumers that we've heard. So the IRS doesn't make those phone calls. Just disconnect the call if you've answered it. Don't return those phone calls. If there is a collection, they have a legitimate collection method. You'll get a letter. You'll know you have back taxes to pay. If there's collection efforts, they're going to have sent you a letter and tell you what collection company will be in contact with you. And then that collection company will be in contact with you by mail as well. It's a two-step process there.
Okay. All right, Art, thank you very much for calling. If you'd like to join in, by the way, you certainly can. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Well, there's so many different things we can talk about today. I hardly know where to start. with the back to seniors for just a minute. Some are reluctant to go online with all the scams they hear about. Do you have some tips for older friends or family members who are nervous about getting online?
Sure.
Sandy, maybe you can talk about
sure.
that.
Sure. Probably the most important thing to do for anyone, no matter who you are, is to practice good cybersecurity. And that includes things like keeping your device up to date with and have a good security software suite loaded and actively updating on a regular basis. It's important to create strong passwords, use a combination of alphabet letters, including capital letters, numerals, and special characters like an exclamation point. And make sure it's a long password. Don't use the word password or the numbers 123456 7, which still apparently are the most commonly used passwords, because those are going to be easy for an identity thief to hack. Another important tip is to use only secure sites when you're shopping or banking online. Look in your browser window for a little padlock or the letters HTTPS, and that S signifies you're on a secure site. If you receive emails or texts with a link or attachment, never click on the link or attachment. It's likely to download malicious software onto your device. And if you're using social media like Facebook or Instagram, one of those applications, look at your privacy settings, and because they usually default to a very open and public setting, just make sure that you're comfortable with the level of information that's being shared.
Well, I tell you what, we have other callers online, so those are good tips. Let's go to Jeff in Dubuque, Iowa, who has something for us. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Larry. Hey, I heard that previous caller talk about getting the calls from scammers trying to get a hold of them, and a lot of these calls, you know, are coming on your cell phone. So I have no affiliation with this app, but I found an app called Hiya, H-I-Y-A, that has brought my sanity back. It's a nationally updated database. And it just continually updates itself, and these calls just don't get through to you.
Yeah, that's an app that I have on my personal cell phone, and I really like it. It will block calls that have been reported by the public as being fraudulent or, you know, some suspicious in some way. If you have a voice-over internet phone in your home, you can also use an application called Nomo Robo, and people have reported to us a lot of success using that. Mm-hmm. If you get a fraudulent phone call, your phone will ring once and then stop. So it's great.
Yeah, it's.
Well, the other thing these
go ahead.
I would say the other thing these people could do is take a different attitude towards it, and I mean, you can play with them. If they're trying to scam you, if you got the time, just mess with them.
Yeah, but sometimes you can get in trouble with that too, Michelle.
You can. We've heard plenty of stories from different callers who've played with them and end up with the police on their doorstep because the caller, you know, does a reverse on them and calls the police about the call. If the scam artist is very good, which most of them are, they find a way to peel out information about you that can be used. And they also, if they're just generating lead lists to sell on the marketplace, you'll end up on one of those lead lists because you're willing to engage. And so there's different layers of value with those lead lists that are out there, those that just answer the phone, those that engage, those that purchase, those who will give up information. So it can be entertaining and it can be fun. It's not something we recommend because you have to know where your line is and how talented you are back at these very creative and talented individuals, these scam artists.
Yeah. And Sandy, you mentioned Haya on another show, and I put it on my phone, too, after that. I took your advice, and that, it does work pretty darn well.
It does. It will flag an incoming call as fraudulent or sales call, and it allows you to block calls from numbers that you don't want to receive calls from. But I think there are a number of those types of apps available for Android and iPhones. And if you're not using one, by all means, get one on your phone.
Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Louisa DeVogel, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network as we take a look at consumer scams with our two guests, Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection. I have an open line. You can join in with your own question, comment, complaint at 1-800-642-1234. Of course, you can always email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Let's go to John in Richland Center next. Hi, John.
Hi. Yeah, I've received several calls. They say they're from my credit card company, and there's no problem with my account, but they have a special offer or a special rate, but there's no identification as to who's calling, so I'm wondering what's behind that.
Yeah, there were a number. This was a very large telemarketing sweep in 2011 and continued through really 2013. And we are seeing it come back in slow amounts now, but that's lower your interest rate on your credit card. And it had been Rachel, then Carmen, then Heidi. Now we understand there's a British accent woman out there as well doing this. And this is another one of those situations where they're trying to get your information as well as generate lead lists where you would be on that list to sell to others as someone who would engage in the callers. It was its primary purpose. But at the same time, if they could get your information, they had even more stuff to sell because it's not connected with a specific credit card company. They don't know really anything about you, and they make it seem as though it's your legitimate card company, but they ask you the question. So again, never give out your information to an unsolicited phone call. You didn't ask for them to call you, so don't give them anything.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, John. Appreciate the call. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Before we go back to the phones, online shopping. I'm always nervous about online shopping, to be perfectly honest. There are a couple of places that I will go to, the Milwaukee Brewers, for example. I bought a few things. My daughter's a Brewers fan, and so I'm comfortable with using that particular site. But I imagine there are some things to think about before you do the online shopping.
Sure, especially as we get closer to the holidays, because criminals know how much money is flying around in cyberspace as people purchase their holiday gifts, and they want a piece of that action. I guess the first thing I would say is what I said earlier about keep practicing good cybersecurity. Keep your devices up to date. Keep good security software loaded. Make sure your Wi-Fi is locked and protected. But when we see online holiday scams, they often feature in-demand products like the specific electronics item that
everybody
has
wants,
to have,
yeah.
Or the child's toy that everybody has to have that are always hard to get. Criminals will use fake websites or make them available on online classifieds, put messages out on social media, and they'll trick you into downloading malicious software or providing your credit card information.
Yeah.
So you should always make sure a website is legitimate before you place your order. Some things you can do is look at your browser window, make sure you're at Amazon.com and you mm-hmm. don't have a letter wrong in the address. Look for a physical location for the company and contact information. We've seen these fake websites don't give you anyone to contact if you have a question. And just be aware that identity thieves can create websites that will mimic a legitimate company's site. So don't trust a site based solely on appearance. Look at your browser window to make sure you're at the right place.
Let's see. Brent in Wichita, Kansas, it's your turn. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, guys. I'm a truck driver, and I was just telling your screener that I got a call this past summer where the guy was Arabic, I was assuming, had very bad English, very broken English, very hard to understand. But he was trying to work me, telling me that he was an agent and that I just had to pay a one-time $9,000 fee, and then everything would be taken care of. And I kind of was like, okay, this doesn't sound right. Yeah, you know, I was going through my head, just da-da-da-da-da. So I got to a point where I pulled over, and I was like, that one caller said, if you could kind of play with them. But then he got to the point to where he knew I was messing with him, and they called me back again. But is there anything you can do when they threaten you or your family? Because he said then he was going to rape and kill my wife.
Oh, my goodness. That's the, Michelle, comments?
Well, that's exactly right, is that they are getting very aggressive. The call will likely escalate if you play with them. They can know some information about you potentially, given Google Maps and Google Earth, but you're traveling, so they likely don't know where you're at, but with family and things. And we've seen that reverse, where they call the police, but most of these callers are overseas. They're with the IRS ring in October. Last year, there were thousands of individuals at a number seven call centers in India that were broken up, that call ring. We know that the call centers have begun, that they've redeveloped. There's new call centers in India making these calls again. We know that from our federal partners. So they tend to be overseas. But that's the concern with engaging and playing with them, is that there will be threats and there will be concern. We haven't seen any acts on those threats, but that they do escalate those calls.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Brent, for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Karen a chance to join in. Karen, your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hi there. So first of all, I feel really terrible because I have let my children play with the callers and talk to them on the phone, and yeah. Now I feel awful because I don't want them threatening my family. But the reason I'm calling is my son is a senior, and College Point has reached out to him. It's a group that says it's affiliated with the Bloomberg out in New York, and they're offering free services. I don't know if it's a scam or not. How do I research and find out about that?
Okay, so a company calling itself College Point. Yeah. How would you go about researching?
Affiliated with Mike Bloomberg.
Supposedly.
Yeah, that's
right.
What they say. And so far, they've been actually really appropriate. I'm just, you know, I hate to be skeptical about everybody.
Well, it doesn't hurt to be skeptical. Karen.
Anytime services are offered for free, you kind of wonder what the catch is.
Right.
One thing you could do would be to talk to your school guidance counselors and see if they know of any reputable services that could help. And this is on college placement or scholarships, or what is it?
Well, they're offering to help him do a personal statement, apply to schools that would be appropriate for him, and get scholarships. And I did talk to our local guidance counselor, and I also called UW-Madison and asked if they knew of him, and they did not. Okay. And so obviously that concerns me.
Yeah, what I've done in similar situations is do a Google search. So you would search the name of this company and the word review, or scams, you know, and just kind of do some digging on the internet, because chances are other parents have gone through the same thing with this company and have posted advice of some kind about.
Another way would be to, since they say they're claimed to be associated with Bloomberg, did you say?
Yeah, Mike Bloomberg.
I would maybe contact the Bloomberg.
Well, he hasn't answered my calls yet.
Well, he's not going to answer your calls, but there's an entire staff there that would be, if you go to their site, you should be able to get some information just an online chat, I would think.
Yeah, part of Larry's role here is to serve as an advisor to college students, so I would listen to what he says very carefully.
I would be tempted to do that. I'd be a little leery, for sure. So, a couple of ways to go there, Karen. Good luck.
Oh, thank you so much. You take care.
Yeah, take care. Randy in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Randy.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. Appreciate the call.
So what I've got going here, we're on the do not call list too, but it doesn't seem to really help. But as of recent, I've noticed that we're getting, they appear to be local phone numbers with a local prefix.
Yeah.
And when I pick up, it's the same thing about your car warranty about to expire. But the difference is the people just keep talking and you're like, look, I'm not interested. They don't even listen to you. And they keep talking. So then you hang up and then they just call back or they leave an 844 number. Which I then tried to call to say, look, don't call me anymore. And it says the number is, that is not a working number. And I'm wondering, geez, now did I call some number that I'm going to get a fee for? I don't know how to stop them.
Yeah.
So one of the best things for, or one of the things I guess I'd ask you to do is to report this to us. We have had an increase in reports about the local numbers appearing on caller ID and them not being legitimate local companies behind that. And that has a term. It's neighbor spoofing at this point. So it makes it look like a legitimate call. So you're more enticed to pick up. If you cannot pick that up, that's going to help decrease those calls as you answer. That could potentially increase. And the more you engage, the more calls you'll likely receive there. But given the sales behind it and the information to lead off of, we'd really like you to report this call to us because we do try and track all the information. The masking of the caller ID is a problem for us in tracking it, but the sales behind each one helps us through our investigations.
Yeah.
Okay. And then real quick, though, but what about when they leave a number, 844, and they ask you to call back, and you call back, and the number doesn't even work? What's the angle behind that?
Who knows?
You know, some of the numbers work, but they move around so quickly. So you could be having an old script that's being left on your machine. They do work for a very limited period of time, but that's just information that can be paired with others through an investigation.
Okay, great. Thank you for your
help. All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Diane in Middleton couldn't stay on the line, but said the Indian Head Library system in the Eau Claire area was hacked. They obtained her driver's license, date of birth, name, and phone number. Is this enough information to open up a financial account in her name? So it's driver's license, date of birth, name, and phone number. All that information, that sounds to me like it can almost be enough. Michelle?
Well, often you're also to do financial accounts now because of different security levels. You're going to need a social security number. But what this information can do is help the identity thief pair together and get to a social security number. So you should have concern. And different options that you can do to protect yourself with data breaches, there are two tools you can choose between, really. One would be placing a fraud alert on your credit report with the credit reporting agencies. And this can be a 90-day that you can renew or a 7-year alert that's in place. But what that does is notify you that others are trying to take out extensions of credit in your name. It doesn't stop it from happening. It's a notification. The alternative is to put on what's called a security freeze. The first one, that fraud alert, you make one phone call, it's placed on all three, and it's free. The security freeze, you have to go to each of the three credit reporting agencies and place that because you get PINs and passwords. Right now, because of the Equifax data breach until January 31st, the Equifax security freeze is free if you get in on it now. But the other two, in Wisconsin, there's permitted to be a $10 fee if you're not a victim of identity theft. And being a victim is that your information's been misused, not just accessed by someone. So this is something that locks it down. It that security freeze prevents individuals from taking out extensions of credit. It puts the lockdown unless you put a temporary thaw on because you're going to go buy a boat or something and need a loan. So those are two alternatives. The other thing is to make sure you are constantly monitoring, getting your free credit report on a rotational basis, making sure that you're checking your bills and accessing your information and doing regular monitoring.
By the way, my credit union, I get anytime I go online, I can read and see what that credit score is. Is that credit score, is that a valuable tool for me to have or anybody else to have?
It is and isn't. If you're going to go get a loan, it's important to know your credit score because it can influence what kind of rate or how much credit you'll be offered. But it doesn't necessarily help you detect identity theft.
Okay.
Because of the algorithms behind the credit score, we're told by the bankers that a late payment can cause a big dip when you think maybe that's a thievery's activity. You need to be monitoring your actual credit report that shows what type of extensions or credit are taken out in your name, your living history, those addresses, your loan history. Get that full report. And again, you can get that from each of the three credit reporting agencies, one free each year. So if you put it on a four-month rotation and select each one throughout the year, you can do this constant monitoring. And if you can't put yourself on that regular rotation, get all three at least once a year so you're at least doing annual monitoring. But that's at annualcreditreport.com, where you go get it, annualcreditreport.com. You will need to give your Social Security number, so make sure your browser's up to date and everything Sandy talked about with your computer system, and monitor that report.
Let's go to Janet in Maguanigo next. Hi, Janet. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm calling about the scam local phone numbers.
Yeah.
I've had them from the local bank, a local nursing home, and the local YMCA. The difference is that the number that they use is one digit different than the real number.
Yeah.
So I've called the nursing home, called the bank, to say, I think you should be aware that someone's representing themselves as you, and they've never heard about it. I talked to the manager in each case, and I'm wondering how much education you do to agencies such as that, like a statewide library system or a statewide banking system or nursing home system, to educate these people that their number might be used.
Yeah.
We do regular business roundtables around the state and talk about issues like what businesses can do in terms of cybersecurity and protecting their customer data, and share information about issues they've seen. So we do quite a bit of this. This specific issue, I am just hearing about for the first time. We know that because these scammers, who are most likely calling from overseas, can use internet technology to make your caller ID look like whatever they want it to, they're frequently using local exchange numbers because you're more likely to pick up the phone when you see that local exchange. And I am also starting to think it's a way for them to get around some of those call blocking apps, because it will come up on your phone as the local bank, you know, rather than a fraudulent call. So yes, we do a lot of a lot of outreach to businesses in the state, especially small businesses that don't have the resources necessarily to have a really in-depth cybersecurity plan.
Yeah. Jana, thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Rusty in Marshall next. Rusty, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. In the last month or so, I've been receiving phone calls, and they're a local area code number. I just don't recognize the number, and I answer. and it's somebody telling me that it's my last chance to get in on help with my student loans, and they refer to some act that Barack Obama signed and all this kind of stuff that I can get help with my student loans. Well, I'm in my 70s, and I don't have any student loans. Yeah.
Good. So, that's good.
I went on the GI Bill, but that's a million years ago. Nobody in my family has any student loan debt. And why are they asking me?
Well, in the background is a computer automatically dialing numbers by the hundreds of thousands. And the crook is thinking, there are so many people in the U.S. with student debt, we're likely to catch some people if we cast a really broad net. So I think that's what's happening there. This is a fraudulent call. They're probably looking for either personal information, including the amount of debt you hold, that they can sell on to other companies or criminals, or it's just a completely fraudulent operation in the background.
Is that the kind of thing that Rusty should report to you guys? Or
absolutely. This kind of information is very helpful to us. Not only for us at the state level, but we also report this on to federal agencies, including the Federal Trade Commission, FBI, Secret Service, and other federal agencies that really have the resources to track this stuff down. So I do recommend that he report it, and he can either do that online on our website, datcp.wi.gov, or you can call our toll-free hotline at 1-800-422-7128.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, Rusty. Appreciate it. And Terry in Colfax, your turn. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a senior, but I'm a senior with background in IT. And what I've noticed in my area is it's quite prevalent. These telecommunications vendors doing broadband service and telephone, whatever, in Wisconsin, they will oversell their areas and not create more bandwidth to accommodate new users. I've called DATCP before, and I didn't get any real concrete solutions as what to do. But in my book, when I get my bill, I call it fraud. Am I wrong?
All right. Michelle?
Depending upon the means of the solicitation, yes, it is of concern. If they have made representations that they can deliver a particular bandwidth and aren't doing that, that is something that we need to know about in writing from you in a written complaint. And based on patterns of complaints and information that we have, we do initiate investigations that, because of the technology that's used, take time to go through and sort out. But that is something that if consumers are made a representation that they can get 3 gigabytes, you know, I'm totally making up the numbers of bandwidth, and speed of delivery, then and they only get one, or they don't even have the ability to deliver the three, that's a problem for us.
Okay, so you would write a complaint to you could do it online, right?
Yep, datcp.wi.gov. If you have bills and statements, you can upload copies of all that with your complaint, because we're going to need that.
All right. Thank you, Terry, for calling. Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers, our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at consumer scams. We've talked about scams involving seniors and Medicaid open enrollment and a whole lot more. If you have something, you can join us at 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page Mary in Milwaukee has something for us, so let's go there. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like some feedback from you on a method that I use, and that is that I only answer the phone if there is a name that I know attached to it. Thinking that if anybody calling from anywhere has a legitimate concern, they'll leave a message on my voicemail. So often I see a lot of area code, my local area code calls. I check my voicemail. There is never any message. So I'm thinking these are all worthless calls. Am I right or wrong in that kind of thinking?
Well, I think you're absolutely right to be screening your calls because so many of the calls we receive are these fraudulent calls. At one time, early on in the robocalling explosion, they were leaving messages. And I remember having a ton of messages from Rachel wanting to lower my credit card interest rates. And I believe what's happening is that the criminals don't want to pay for the computer time, you know, it would take to leave that message on your machine. They would rather talk to a live person. So you are correct that those calls, when they don't leave a message, are most likely fraudulent calls.
Perfect.
All right. There you go. Thanks, Mary. Patty in Door County, your turn. Hi, Patty.
Hi, good morning, Larry. This is such a great and helpful and useful program, as they always are. I have a low-tech scam that happened to me in Illinois at my little private local bank. I have checks, and I am too thorough of a person, so I have my full name and my middle initial, my husband's, and then I would always in the memo put down, if I was filling out something for my MasterCard, I would be stupid enough to put down the credit card number.
Ooh.
For referencing, or my electrical number, electric account. I did this many years ago, and someone at my bank put two and two together, and they went to a very local little mall and bought $5,000 worth of off a little push cart around the mall. And then I hadn't learned it enough. 2 months later, it happened to my other credit card. That's all as far as it went. But, you know, sometimes we think these big high-tech things, but just keeping your checks very simple. You maybe put P, you know, and then your last name, and don't put your full name, don't put your middle initial, and keep your checks very simple and never put, like I did, full information on them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember when we all used to put our Social Security numbers on our checks because that was the thing to do. Michelle doesn't remember that, but we did.
We did driver's license numbers.
Yeah, okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Speaking of low-tech things you can do to protect yourself from identity theft, take a look at your purse or wallet and look at the number of credit cards you have in there. Just strip down to the bare necessity, one or two. You don't need to carry every credit card you own with you all the time. And if you have a Medicare card in your purse or wallet, don't carry it with you. I mean, it just makes it so easy for a thief to steal your purse in a parking lot, and then they have your Social Security number. Yeah. So until the Medicare cards are replaced, what we recommend doing is making a copy of your Medicare card and X out the first five numbers and carry that with you. And if you are in an emergency situation, the clinic or emergency room will understand and give you some time to get your real Medicare card to them.
Number, yeah. Okay, there we go. Thanks a lot, Patty. Appreciate the call. Lynette in Richfield, your turn now. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling regarding the spoofing of local area codes and exchanges. I looked up my own phone number, and my phone number is listed out there on many different websites as being a spammer.
Yes.
So I get these calls back from people, you know, who happen to answer the phone, and then I'll get the call back, and they think I'm the one that called them. but I didn't.
Yeah, we encounter quite a bit of that at Consumer Protection. Consumers will complain, and as I said earlier, we research every number, and part of that research is to call the number, see who is answering, what kind of sales pitch or solicitation or whatever is behind it. And there's been many times we reach legitimate individuals whose number is being spoofed, and they have no idea about it. And so we may have contacted you at some point, and we make records, so future complaints, we know this, but the way that they just take over numbers and represent them for that neighborhood spoof, so it looks like it's a local individual calling. So that is happening, and don't have any advice as to what to do in regards to that, other than if you don't answer, changing your voicemail so those who are calling you to check on it know that you know your number's spoofed.
Yeah.
Another thing I wanted to bring up is I oftentimes receive that lower your credit card bill, and the phone number that is displayed, at least when I get the call, the phone number that's displayed is an actual real 800 number for Chase Bank, but Chase Bank is not the one doing the calls.
Oh. So there's another little twist.
And that's that piece that I don't think we've used the term yet today, that imposter. They're taking over and representing themselves as a legitimate company, but they, if pushed and asked, wouldn't be able to likely back it up and provide you any information, because Chase Bank doesn't call you to do these things. You call them using the number you know about from the back of your credit card or your bill or your bank statement situation with them. And it's another means of trying to legitimize the scam so you will engage in the call.
You just have to be so skeptical. And just keep in mind that most fraud is perpetrated either through a phone call or an email. So when you get those calls or emails from somebody who claims to be your bank, you just have to be very skeptical.
Yeah. Thank you for calling. Terry in the UP, it's your turn. Hi. Thank you for calling.
All right. Great. Good show. Always good tips here. I'm in Michigan, of course.
Yeah.
And your guest provides a service for people in Wisconsin, correct?
Yeah.
Do they know of a similar service in Michigan that they provide, people can report to and all of that?
Sure. Michelle?
I don't have it with me, but you could call our 800 number, or even the Federal Trade Commission would likely have the connection for the Michigan Consumer Protection Agency that could very well be out of their Attorney General's office. Our number is 1-800-422-7128. If you want to give a call, and they have a book with all the different states' consumer protections contact information.
All right, great. Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. And Jill in Rhinelander, your turn. Hi, Jill.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a comment. If I get a call and I suspect that it's one of these robocalls, I'll pick up the phone, but I do not say hello, because that'll trigger the robo on the other end. If you don't say anything and it's a real person, they're going to say hello, hello, hello. But if you don't say anything, there's no response on the other end.
Yeah. Hmm.
That could be.
And weren't you telling us another time, Sandy, that if you say, if a person does say, is this Larry Mueller? And I say yes, that they can turn that around and say, yes, you agreed to some
deal? Yeah, that was a scam that was going around several months ago where there were these random calls occurring. And the theory was that they were trying to get you to say yes, which they would record and then insert into another script of you agreeing to purchase some service. And I think we did hear that had occurred in a few situations. So again, best not to engage in any way.
All right.
Screen your calls, like our earlier caller would said.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you, Jill. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And, of course, you can join in, too. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Stuart in DeForest, it's your turn next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning. I hear a lot of people calling up about all these robocalls. I actually signed up for the no robo this morning, and it worked within like 10 minutes. The phone rang once, and that was it. And I looked on the caller ID, and I could see it was a no robo. So all the people calling in should go on, go online and listen to the ladies and sign up for the no robo. It does not take that long. You go on there. Most of your phone companies out there are already set up with it.
Yeah,
so
no
it's
more.
Not that hard to do.
It's NoMoRobo, right?
Correct, yeah.
NoMoRobo.com, and that will cut down the calls you receive by 99%. But remember, it only works if you have voice-over internet. If you have a hardwired phone, it will not work on that.
No, that's the sad part.
Yeah,
unless
sad.
You get your phone company through, like, like mine's through Charter. So I do
right.
have a landline, but it goes through Charter through
right.
the internet.
So there's a modem, right?
Right, correct.
All right. Thanks, Stuart, and good to know. It only took 10 minutes, huh?
Well, it took a little bit longer. I had to reset my modem. There's a little issue with Charter, but it was not that hard.
All right.
Great.
No more robo. Well, Hiya works pretty good, too.
Yeah.
Could you have them both?
Hiya works on a mobile phone.
Okay.
Or on a tablet if you have a phone line associated with that.
Okay,
yeah.
That's how it works. Mm-hmm. Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen, our guests today, will take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back. Stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network, taking a look at consumer scam issues with our two guests, Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have them along, and thanks so much for listening in. One open line at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. A caller was concerned that a previous caller made a discriminatory remark about a person being of Arabic descent or from another country, and wanted us to kind of address that on the air. Michelle, it's a very difficult kind of situation. How do you respond to that kind of thing?
Well, I think what we're talking about is where the call centers are located that we know about from our federal partners and where these rings have been broken up. And many of these calls from these scam artists are coming from overseas. They're coming from a number of different countries overseas. And then with that, the individuals making those calls tend to be from those populations. So we will hear accents on the individuals placing the calls. It's where they're being centered from.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to Ben in Marinette next. Hi, Ben. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
What can we do for you?
Well, I wanted to voice a little opinion on this. When people receive calls about fraudulent offers and people saying that you owe money or they're looking to give you something for free, for all the callers who kind of read into it because you never know if it is real or not, ask them to send you some paperwork in the mail. Don't give them your address, but see if they can send you something legitimized through the mail.
Yeah. Is that an approach, Sandy?
Sure. We've given that advice before, especially in relation to solicitations for charitable donations. Ask to see their annual budget and how the donation will be used. Mm-hmm. And if it's fraudulent, you aren't going to get any paperwork, which I think is Ben's point.
Yeah.
But another thing to remember, if you suspect a call is fraudulent, you don't have to talk to these people. You can just hang up, and really, you don't have to say no thank you. Just hang up.
Yeah. Thanks again for calling, Ben. Rosemary in Whitewater, your turn. Hi, Rosemary.
Good afternoon. I would like to know if your people have heard about a private caller. I keep getting 3 to 4 calls a day from a private caller. I do not pick up, no messages left. Do they know anything about that?
It's kind of what we were talking about, I think, a little bit, isn't it, Sandy?
Yeah, I get a lot of those, too. My caller ID will say private or private caller. Remember that the most likely criminals on the other end of the call can manipulate your caller ID to make it say whatever they want to say. And apparently, having a designation like private caller will make most people more likely to pick up the call and talk to them. So it's probably not a private caller. It's probably a crook on the other end.
Never is a message. And I have a zillion calls that I have written down that simply make no sense to me, and they are never is a message. So if I don't know the person who's calling, their name comes up with their number, I do not answer.
Yeah. That's an excellent strategy, and it's one that a lot of people are using now.
Yeah, good for you, Rosemary. Thank you very much for calling, and keep it up. Keep doing what you've been doing. I think that's the best approach. Oh, man. David in Wanakee, your turn. Hi, David.
Hello. Just want to alert the people that an old scam has resurfaced. I got a phone call yesterday. Grandpa, this is your grandson calling. I'm in trouble. Well, number one, I just hung up, by the way. I have no grandson.
Yeah.
And it's an old scam, and it's resurfaced. Just want people aware of it.
Yeah. Thanks for that call. And we've had people actually call who have actually been the children of the grandparents who called and actually sent money and lost their money because they kind of got scammed out of it.
Right. And I really appreciate him calling to share this, because that's the best way for everyone to know that it's happening and learn from it. But the grandparent scam, as we call it, it does resurface. It goes in waves. And now that it's holiday travel and people are moving about for school, going away, that kind of thing, where that contact can be harder, the scam pops back up. But grandson calls, I'm in trouble. You need to wire me money or send gift cards for payment. It could be because you've been mugged, a medical problem, in jail. But don't tell mom and dad. That's the big thing. Don't tell mom and dad, grandpa or grandma, whomever they're reaching. And they're very creative. They pull information out of the individual answering the phone as the call goes along. So don't engage in this. Go call the parents or the child and check in.
Yeah, David, thank you very much.
This is another one where if you send the money and are victimized by the scam, the calls aren't going to stop. They're going to continue, and they will continue to get more and more violent and aggressive. So if you're in this situation, please report it to local law enforcement.
Yeah, thanks, David. Thank you for calling. Mike in Edgerton, your turn. Hi, Mike. Whoop, we lost Mike. Let's go to Tom in Stevens Point. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Larry. I'm the pastor of a Catholic parish here in Stevens Point, and we're doing a campaign to seek financial support for a parish building project. And one of the problems our volunteers, members of our parish, have had is that people don't answer the phone because they're afraid that there's going to be somebody on the other end scamming them. And I guess I'm a little discouraged in that our fear shouldn't be answering the phone. The fear should be what we do once we answer the phone.
Yeah.
And so if people are on guard, attentive to what the caller is doing or asking, we don't necessarily need to be afraid. Sometimes there are people we actually know, we just don't recognize the number or whatever that shows up on our caller ID.
Yeah. So what do you think, Michelle?
I understand that. We encounter that with small businesses that we work with that want to reach out to their clients and can't reach them, banks who are trying to validate things with an ongoing transaction with a customer. The flip side to that we know about from our federal partners in law enforcement is that some of these calls that are made are purposely to generate lead lists so that these scam artists know who will answer the phone and engage and pick up. So it is a balance. You hate to have that much skepticism. And so, you know, our family plan is start to leave that message, because then if I'm interested in it, I know you're legitimate, I'll return the phone call and engage, and I'll know the importance of the call and be able to, you know, pick up the line if it's still live. If I have a traditional answering machine, if you have voicemail, you can return the call because you'll know who it is. So I think that's the other side of the coin there.
Yeah. So in Tom's case, the people who are making the calls could leave a message. Because if the person doesn't pick up, typically there's going to be a way for them to leave a message, and then have a message, a sort of a tight message put together, mm-hmm. that they can say on the answering machine. That's right. Probably the best approach.
Right, and if they're part of a parish, they'll know that it's a legitimate campaign to be raising funds. If they're reaching out to the community behind the parish, there'll be a way for the community to validate the fundraising that's happening and or check for the charitable solicitation as well. So there'll be lots of ways for them to legitimize that phone call.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. Jim and Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. I would like to thank the ladies and the Department of and their Department of Agriculture and their section, and also you for providing all kind of information. We did have a contract problem with Falco Windows, and we wrote them a letter, and they wrote the company a letter, and that was resolved. So good work.
Oh, well, that's always good to hear, isn't it, Michelle?
It's always very nice to hear that things went well and that it worked out, and the appreciation.
Yeah, sometimes consumers contact us not necessarily because there's been some kind of criminal activity, but because communication is broken down or there's frustration growing. And in those cases, we act as an intermediary on behalf of the consumer and help communication along. And that sounds like that's what happened in this situation.
Yeah, so that's great. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it very much. Sue in Crivets, it's your turn. Hi, Sue.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Good afternoon. I'm calling. Thank you. I'm calling because I get a local number that comes up on my cell phone, caller ID, and I never answer it because I don't recognize it, which I do with all the calls I don't recognize. And then I will call it back later. I did call it back later, and when I talk to the person, she says that she never called me, that her phone was never used to call me. Can they copycat numbers like that?
Yep.
Yeah, they absolutely can. And we heard from a woman earlier in the show who was the victim of that happening. Mm. So they can manipulate the caller ID to make it look like whatever they want it to look like. And that's obviously what was happening in this situation, too.
Yeah.
The lady said she never called, so I said next time it comes up, I just don't answer, and I won't call her back.
Yeah,
right.
That's the best approach.
Okay. Thank you very much, and you all have a great day.
You as well, Sue. Thank you for calling. Marty in Janesville, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hey, good afternoon. Question. So I get a pastor and or a priest calling me from XYZ Church asking for donations, and if I say to him, well, okay, send me some certificate showing that you are a priest or a pastor. Then what happens?
Well, you can ask for the information about the fundraising campaign that they're doing in writing, and the church would have that material in writing and be able to provide it. You could use your own resources to call the church to verify that the campaign exists rather than the number that they're leaving you. If it's in your community, you could certainly stop by, but it's likely going to be on their website as well, depending upon what the fundraiser is about.
Yeah, and I doubt that they were taking the donations over the phone. It was just an explanation of the building campaign. So if I were asked for my credit card number, that would be a red flag for me.
Yeah.
and you'd always want to make, if you're writing a check or anything else, you're going to want to give it directly to that organization rather than the individual as well, making that payment that way.
All right. Thank you very much. Bobby in Madison, let's go to you next. Hi, Bobby. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for the program. I'm calling about these telemarketing automated calls where they'll, if you listen long enough, they'll then say, press 1 if you want more information, press 2 if you want to be removed from this list. And I'm wondering how legitimate that number 2 is.
Well, remember, if your number is on the no-call list, the fact that you're receiving that phone call means that's a violation of state and federal law. So that should be an indicator to you that anything past that is probably being done for some kind of fraudulent purposes.
That's what my husband says.
Yeah, so he's right.
my hope is that my name will be removed is greater than my common sense. Okay,
yeah.
I won't do that anymore.
They're trying to get you to let them know that your phone number is a live number with somebody who's willing to engage with a telemarketing caller.
Yeah, so don't do that. There you go. Listen to your husband, in this case at least, Bobby. Okay, thank you. Scott emailed to ask, what is stopping scammers from having a secure website? If there's nothing, then is a secure website a sure enough sign that the website is not a scam? So let's say Chase Bank. Somebody puts up a website for Chase Bank. How do you know that it's Chase Bank and not some nefarious outfit?
I think some of it is in the registration of the website that you are trying to obtain. And so they usually buy up the .coms and the name variations, the misspellings around the legitimate .gov, .orgs from it in having that. And so they will make it be that imposter, that imitation website with all the name variations around, some of it going to the expense of registering that site.
Yeah, and some of these lookalike websites or lookalike email with a company logo can be very difficult to detect whether it's the real thing or fake. So if there's any question, type in very carefully into the browser window chasebank.com or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And make sure that you're going out to them rather than following a link or an advertisement on a Google search.
Makes sense. Ed in Gurnee, Illinois, your turn. Hi, Ed.
Oh, good morning. Good afternoon. Listen, thanks for your show. I love it. You guys are great. I couldn't hear the name, or would you repeat the name of the app for the smartphone? I could not quite get how it's spelled or what it's called.
A couple of them.
Yeah, probably the best thing to do would be to go to your Google Play or iTunes App Store, and you can search Call Blocker app. And there are a number of great ones out there. Just look for a high user rating and a lot of downloads. Don't look at one that, you know, has a really high rating but only three or four downloads. So the one that Larry and I are using right now is called Hiya, H-I-Y-A, and it's one of many that are great and easy to use.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate this, and thanks for the job you're doing. That's why we're members of WPR.
So. All right. Wonderful. Thank you, Ed. Appreciate the call. Diane in Menominee, it's your turn. Hi, Diane.
Hi. Let me turn my radio off.
All right.
I was just explaining to your screener about the calls that are listed as private ID or, you know, private caller.
Yeah.
It's not always a scam because my physician, when he tries to get a hold of me or we have some tests we're expecting to get a call back about or whatever, they're often listed as private caller.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the HIPAA, they can't talk to an answering machine. They can't leave a message. So.
Yeah.
Well, that could be. But in that case, the doctor or person in the doctor's office would say, this is Dr. X's office. Please call us back. So that the earlier lady was saying the private caller call she receives, don't leave any message at all.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Thank you very much for calling. Kathy in Kiel says her mother-in-law received a call from someone saying they were UW-Madison with a long survey. They asked for the last four digits of her social security number and her address because they said they would send her $20. She did receive the money. Is this real? She is still skeptical. And I can say that there are researchers at the UW and at other institutions that do that, and they do offer a dollar incentive. And sometimes it's $5, sometimes it's $20. And so many of them are legitimate. I think if they started asking for more information than that, Sandy, then the as part of the survey itself,
like an entire social security number or credit card information, banking information, that would be a red flag.
Yeah, and typically you're not going to get that. You definitely are not going to get that in a University of Wisconsin survey, for sure. So there you go. And she got the money. So the fact that she got the money probably should ease her worries a little bit. Let's see. And I have some other callers. I'm just looking through our whole list. We've had a large number of calls that who have left messages, but I'm not getting through all of them. This whole business about data breaches with Equifax as an example, it caused Michelle to even drop her pen.
Sorry about that.
Oh no, that's all right. I mean, have you gone to Equifax to get the free, or should we be going to Equifax? There are some things that you have to fill out when you go to Equifax, mm-hmm. as an example.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to, if you want to find out if you have potentially been involved in the breach of information, you do need to put in your last name and the last six digits of your social security number, and then they'll return that you may have been part of this or you may not have been. It's a may statement. And then you have till the end of January, the 31st, to either take advantage of the free credit report monitoring or put that security freeze on with Equifax. If you put one security freeze on, to make it useful, you do need to put a security freeze on with the other two credit reporting agencies as well. So I know that I've gone to check to see if I was impacted or not and done that. And some consumers are concerned to hand over even a portion of their information. And a banker that we worked with, his thought process was, if knowing isn't going to change what action you take about this, then don't go check. But if knowing means you're going to go and do something different to protect your information, then go check.
Yeah. And I think just back to the doctor for a minute, somebody mentioned that you can give your doctor permission to leave a message, and then the doctor can do that. So that's wonderful as well. Michelle, Sandy, thank you so much. You'll be back in a month and we'll do this all over again. Thank you very much. Michelle Reinen and Sandy Chalmers with the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. They'll be back on December 6th, actually, and we will do this all over again. Tomorrow, Botanical Gardens will be on our mind on our Garden Talk show. We'll take a behind-the-scenes look at Botanical Gardens. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.